Hello and welcome to the Memory Dump. It is Thursday, September 25th. You are listening to KPCRadio.com, and we have some interesting developments with the iPhone. I mean, again, we are going to get into more hard sciences even today and then from now on, but we just couldn't pass this up.
This is actually a pretty big deal. So, like we said in the last show, we're trying to keep the phone talk to minimum, but this is a pretty big deal. As many of you know, Apple recently released a new iPhone 6 and a 6 Plus, which is going to be the topic of discussion for this problem. So the iPhone 6 Plus is 5.5 inches diagonally. It's a pretty big phone, all right? It rivals with the size of the Galaxy Note 4, which is 5.7 inches. And the back is made out of pure aluminum, which is very, very malleable, which means it can bend very easily. So what people have discovered is through normal everyday use, putting the phone in your pocket and just walking around and sitting down for 10 or 12 hours and from when you wake up to when you go to bed, the phone is showing a very slight bent, and that's from the shape of your thigh. It's bending it. The pressure from your pocket and the shape of your thigh is bending the freaking phone.
It's a combination of your body heat, the heat it itself creates just by operating, and the pressure over time exerted by your pants on the phone over the curve of your thigh.
So this isn't just messing up the back of the phone. The screen on the front is bending with it, so you have a sort of curved display now going on your iPhone 6 Plus.
It's a feature. So this whole thing was kind of gaining traction Monday or Tuesday or so, when people, you know, had the phone for a few days and they were already kind of noticing it. And someone on YouTube found out about it. I guess he's a fairly well-known personality for reviewing technology and things. I believe his YouTube channel is called Unbox Therapy.
I've heard of him.
And so he heard about it, and he made a video the same day that all these rumors were going around. And he said when he heard about it, he immediately took his phone, which was a 6 Plus, out of his pocket and inspected it himself. And he found that there was already a bend going on in the phone before he even attempted anything. There was already a bend, so it's pretty much already confirmed at that point. But then he said, let's see how easy it is to bend it if we actually tried. And so he took his phone and he wrapped his hands around it.
Which hurt to watch, by the way.
Yeah, well, kind of, sort of, not really. Depends on your company affiliations. So he put his hands around it and he put his thumbs at the center of the back of the screen. And he tried to bend it with just his hands and as little as force as possible. So first he starts out fairly light force, and he gets heavier and heavier, and you can tell. And eventually it just completely bends to his will, and it just bends significantly. It's extremely easy to see and stays that way. So his phone effectively becomes useless.
Yeah, and even if it's not that extreme, if it's a slight bend from everyday use, putting it in your pocket, that's going to make a big difference on your screen. Like, every time you slide your finger over that part of the screen, you're going to feel the bend.
Mm-hmm.
The pictures are going to be distorted. If you're in direct sunlight, the reflections are going to be off.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty big deal. And I don't really see Apple doing a total recall and giving everyone new iPhone 6 Pluses for free. So
they might do what they did when the iPhone 4 was revealed to have antenna problems, because the way they made the case was that when you held it in your hand effectively acted as a Faraday cage on the iPhone 4 blocked signal.
I have the 4 and I go through that pretty often, actually.
Yeah. So first they said to everybody, oh, you're holding it wrong, which is Apple outright was telling their customers, oh, you're using our product wrong. That's real smart. And then they gave free cases to everybody that had bought an iPhone 4, and that kind of alleviated the problem. It was still a little weird. They might do the same thing here, because theoretically having a rigid enough case would keep it from bending.
That's true.
But that also defeats a lot of the purposes of the phone. Like, so if you have to add on a case to keep it from bending, then effectively that case becomes a permanent part of the phone.
Yeah.
And so that'll increase the form factor, and that'll make it thicker, and that'll make it a much less appealing phone.
Yeah. They've done so many stupid things to make the phone as thin as possible. The camera's protruding. They put a smaller battery in it. And now, because of all this, they're just going to make it thicker, and you're not going to get the bigger battery. So there you go.
So the same guy made a follow-up video the same day, where he said he tried to bend the phone back to being straight, And in doing so, he cracked the aluminum and he cracked the screen. So you can't really even bend it back. And then for comparison, he took a Note 3, which is primarily plastic, and because I'm sure a lot of people requested it because they want to see the competition, and he tried doing the same thing. He put as much force as he possibly could, and you could see his knuckles getting white and everything. And while the phone kind of complied a little bit while he was putting the force on it, the second he stopped, it went right back to its normal shape.
Yeah.
So this is an Apple problem. And I'm sure it's because it's a multiple reasons. They did too many things at once. They made the squared edges round, which removed the structural stability, the rigidity. Yeah. They, I'm sure, are using cheap aluminum because the LG G3, also all aluminum, no bending. This is their first time making a phone so big. So I guess they just weren't aware of the different factors at play when it comes to just having it in your pocket.
I would think that would be a pretty good test of whether the phone is ready for consumer use, to have someone use it throughout the day or something for like a month or something and see if anything goes wrong, like the phone bending.
Samsung actually has a durability test where they effectively put the phone face down on a block and then have a machine with a sort of roller apply pressure to the center of the back of the phone to see if it will bend. Presumably, you would think that every phone maker would have some kind of durability test like that. Maybe Apple doesn't. It seems like if they did, they would have caught this.
Well, all the equations work out, so let's ship it, I guess.
Yeah. Then, if that wasn't enough, yesterday Apple released an iOS update that effectively broke your phone.
Yep.
It killed the cell radio in your phone, effectively making it so you can't receive or send calls or texts or data or anything associated with cellular antennas.
So basically turned your phone into an iPod.
Yeah. That's what people were saying, actually. You have an iPhone, you have an iPod 6. And it also broke the Touch ID, the fingerprint scanner.
I could live without for a couple of days until they fixed it. But the cell radio thing's like as big as a deal as it gets when it comes to a phone.
Yeah, so it's all pretty hilarious. Apple looks like one of the Three Stooges right now. And without Steve Jobs kind of man the helm, you know what? Let's take a look at Apple's stock price right now.
All right. While Casey's looking that up, this is actually pretty disappointing because one of the main features of Apple that make it such an Apple phones that make it such an attractive product is their build quality. That's the reason I was considering getting the iPhone 6, because Samsung is like plastic. It feels cheap in the hand. But Apple, the iPhone 4 feels really, really solid. It feels like a brick. I've had this phone for 2.5 years. There's no visible wear and tear that I notice when I hold the phone. What's the stock price at?
To put this in perspective, Apple usually fluctuates by only roughly 0.5% a day. They're currently down 3%. Look at that chart. It's just in free fall.
It's a bunch of zigzags, and at one of the zigzags down point, it just keeps going down.
Yeah. At one of the points of fluctuation, it just falls off a cliff. That's hilarious. So, I mean, hey, if you want to buy into Apple, it's Apple. They'll probably bounce back, probably. So if you want to get in on a low, then now's a pretty good time.
They have a ton of money in reserves. I would not expect this to be the end of them at all. They'll probably fix a problem in the iPhone 6S and everyone will forget about all this.
They learned their lesson that I think the G3 actually has a steel inner structure, an inner frame for reinforcement. I think they learned their lesson.
If they just put like an inner layer of some kind of alloy that's stronger than aluminum that's enough to keep it from bending, this problem wouldn't even exist.
Mm-mm. So there you have it. Apple learned their lesson at the cost of what? They've already sold 10 million units?
Yeah, that's the latest figure I heard. So that's about at least $300 million in revenue.
Yeah. So.
A lot more than that. $3,000 million, so $3 billion.
They learned their lesson at the cost of 10 million different customers.
Are these 10 million? Because I heard this figure too. Are these 10 million just iPhone 6 Plus or all iPhone 6s?
That's a good question. Let's just assume iPhone 6s.
Okay, because if they sold 10 million iPhone 6 Pluses alone, Jesus.
They're anticipated to sell 60 million by December, but probably even more. Who knows? Well, maybe less by now.
All right. Yeah.
So then we have something about vibrating bags, was it?
Yeah, so there's this pretty cool article going around right now from MIT, and they've been having help from Adobe Research. So as probably not many of you know, I just recently learned this myself in my physics class. Sound waves and light waves carry energy and momentum. So you can push something with a flashlight. If I shine a flashlight on Casey, I'm pushing him a little bit. So if you stand like next to a huge speaker that's pretty loud, you can feel the energy. Like, it's vibrating you. You feel like you want to go away from it. It's pushing you away. So the same principle exists when you talk. It's just not as noticeable because you talk at a much lower decibel point. So your voice still carries energy and momentum. And what it does whenever you talk is all the objects around the room receive these sound waves and vibrate by a certain amount because the sound waves are hitting them. So we know that whenever we talk, stuff around the room vibrates. So what these researchers did at MIT and Adobe Research is they took a camera, a high-quality camera that shoots from 2,000 to 6,000 frames per second, which is important. I'll get back to that later. Shot through soundproof glass into a room where people were having conversations and observed objects in the room vibrating, used that video, reversed the process using an algorithm, which I don't fully understand myself, how the algorithm works, and was able to listen in on what was going on in the room through watching objects vibrate, which is pretty amazing. So the reason the camera has to have such a high frame rate is because the frame rate has to be at or higher than the frequency of the sound waves. And sound waves travel – sound waves usually – the human voice usually has a frequency between 80 hertz and 1100 hertz. So that's between 80 FPS and 1100 FPS that you have to have to capture it effectively.
So the human body is a PC.
Okay. So
I know that was a niche joke, but we'll move on.
All right.
So that sounds like some Soviet spy technology.
Yeah, the first thing I thought about this was like some CSI stuff going on, like enhance, zoom in on that potato chip bag, it's vibrating. Oh, the killer admitted to doing it.
You know, that'd be pretty funny if they like actually used this in like an episode of like CSI Miami or something.
Yeah.
I could see them doing it too.
So there's another important feature of this experiment is the camera has to film through soundproof glass because otherwise you could argue that maybe the sound waves were captured by the camera and that's where you're getting it from. It's unethical, blah, blah, blah. Also, if the sound waves reach the camera, it's going to vibrate the lens in the camera and every component of the camera as well. So it would give you a pretty big error.
Hmm.
But they did this stuff through everyday items like a houseplant that was vibrating or a bag of chips. The bag of chips was really good because it's very light and it vibrates at its vibrations are more obvious to the camera than a plant, which is much more massive compared to the bag of chips. But what was I going to say? They use high-quality DSLR cameras, but they also tested it with like an iPhone camera or a Galaxy S5 camera, and they were still able to notice the vibrations, but they weren't as accurate as the ones with the DSLR cameras, of course. You were able to see how many people were talking and whether people were talking and maybe make out a couple of words that are more clear than others, but you weren't really able to understand the conversation as well. But this is very interesting technology. They were talking about obvious applications in law enforcement, like police officers using this or the FBI using this, maybe on more sensitive cases where I have the money to shout out for this kind of stuff. But they were also talking about how it's a new form of imaging. You can send sound waves at an object, see how the object reacts, and you can get through that interaction and you can get the properties of that object. So it's kind of like it's like testing what the object's properties are like when you can't really like hold in your hand and do other kinds of interactions. Just send some sound waves and see how it reacts.
Oh, I think I kind of get it. That would require some insanely precise equipment, though.
They used a regular a phone's camera. It was able to detect the vibrations in – there was a lot of background noise, but it was able to detect the vibrations well enough that you can tell how many people were talking and whether a person was talking or not. But you weren't able to, like, legibly figure out what was being said. I think I could, but that's because they played the recording of what was said before, so it might have been, like, a little placebo effect. Like, I already know what's being said, so yeah, that's what's being said.
Mm-hmm.
But with the DSLR cameras that shoots between 2,000 and 6,000 frames per second, you could tell pretty clearly what was being said. Like, they played Mary Had a Little Lamb, and you could hear it being played.
I remember a while ago that there were these, like, stupid little spy gadgets for kids kinds of things. And one of them was this little satellite dish-looking thing that you pointed at, like, somebody's window, and it would do exactly that. I'm kind of remembering it. It's like it would measure the vibrations in the window of people talking so you can listen to people talking from, like, across the street.
Was it a camera or a satellite dish?
It was this stupid satellite dish-looking thing. I'm sure it was BS because it was, like, $20 at, like, Tops. But okay, it's funny that they use that scientific principle. So
it does have to do with the vibrations, but it's not, like, capturing the video and turning it back into what was being said. I think that's the way that works. It's like a cone, right?
It was – I think it shone a laser on the window, and it measured the feedback on the laser from the window.
Okay, that might be just a gimmick, but
yeah.
I think the way it works is the cone takes sound waves from a large area and focuses it on a small area, so it's a higher decibel, so you can hear it more easily.
Yeah. So that's pretty interesting. It has some funny implications.
Yeah, and by the way, these cameras aren't that rare. Like, 6,000 FPS isn't really much of a feat. There are some cameras they use in movies shoot at, like, 100,000 frames per second. So you can get, like, insane precision with those kind of cameras.
And arguably make a lot of money on YouTube based on how many YouTube channels there are purely dedicated to the fact that they record in slow-mo.
Yeah.
So an Italian neuroscientist has claimed that human head transplants are now potentially possible. Would you like a human head transplant, Simon?
So my head goes on someone else's body?
Or vice versa.
But then what happens to my head?
It's on somebody else's body.
Okay, so someone put... So it's like swapping heads.
Yeah.
Why would I want to do that?
We'll get into that.
It's interesting, but for me personally, I would never do it because I like my body.
I could think of a few different uses for it.
I mean, I guess if your body has some kind of debilitating disease and your head's okay, and theoretically, if your head was just on a different body, you would be all right, then I guess I would do it.
Well, let's get into the article. In a provocative new paper, an Italian neuroscientist outlined how to perform a complete human head transplant, arguing that such a surgical procedure is now within the realm of possibility. So his name is Dr. Sergio Canavero of the Turin Advanced Neuromodulation Group. And he says that he knows how to solve the problem of linking neurological connections between the brain and the neck and the rest of the body, which are, of course, I mean, that's the entire – every nerve in your body pretty much somehow links back into your brain.
Yeah.
So that's – I don't know for sure. I want to say billions of nerves, more than likely.
I have no idea. I'd be guessing.
Me too, but I'm confident in that estimate. So he claims that the greatest technical hurdle to such an endeavor is, of course, the reconnection of the donor's and recipient's spinal cords. It is his contention that the technology only now exists for such linkages, and that his paper sketches out a possible human scenario and outlines the technology to reconnect the severed cord, which he calls Project Gemini. So he estimates that the procedure would cost roughly $13 million, which is...
It's not that ridiculous considering this is cutting edge.
Yeah. When I saw that, I was... I mean, $13 million is a lot of money, but really, I was like, that's it?
I mean, your health insurance covers 85%, so what you're really paying...
I don't know if they cover this.
So you're really paying around $2
million. health insurance is pretty touch and go. I don't know if they'd really be up for that. So among the conditions that could be treated with that kind of thing would be muscular dystrophy, quadriplegia. So let's say you're paralyzed, swap out the head for an able body.
Or why does your head have to go on someone else's body? What if you could build a robot that has a spinal cord and all the other nerve connections, but instead of controlling muscles and tissue, it controls mechanical parts?
Well, that's a whole nother subject, that I've tried to get into before, which is also touch and go. But I was thinking now with what scientists are experimenting with growing body parts and with, you know, stem cells and
right.
on the backs of mice, mm-hmm. what if eventually we could culture somebody's DNA, regrow an entire replacement body based off of their own DNA mm-hmm. and then transplant their head onto that new body.
But you know that person still won't be able to live forever, even had
Yeah.
Because the brain would eventually die.
Of course, but I mean, let's say somebody loses a limb, becomes paralyzed, has serious physical health issues. They could effectively refresh their body.
Yeah, you know, I don't like the idea of becoming 30 and having to deal with a 30-year-old body. I think every time I turn 30, I'll go back to 18 and keep doing that, you know?
Hey, why not? You know, I mean, if the technology gets to a point where we can just do this whenever we want anyway, I'm
but
sure you could do that too.
This is going to be extremely high risk because there's like a billion different things that can go wrong during your surgery. Like maybe one of the connections isn't set perfectly. All of a sudden, you can't control your right hand's pinky.
So the scientist basically claims that the key to the whole thing is a perfectly clean cut to the spinal cord on the recipient body and the head, which is the key to the fusion of the head and the body.
I'm assuming they're going to have to use something like a laser cutter or something. There's no way they can use a saw or anything.
Of course. Even things like scalpels and everything, when you put them down under a microscope, they have such like nanoscopic imperfections that I'm sure that even those would be useless.
Yeah.
It's funny, but the material that the ancient Egyptians actually used to make incisions was actually more precise than the scalpels we use today.
Why aren't we using the ancient Egyptians' tools then?
I don't know. I think they were made of obsidian.
Oh, so. Yeah. That might be kind of difficult.
Yeah. So that's effectively the extent of the article, but it's an interesting point of discussion because it has a whole lot of implications, obviously. I mean, there's health implications, like I said, what if you're paralyzed or have health issues? There's things like even when you get into like gender issues.
Oh, yeah.
Let's say that somebody identifies as a woman.
Yeah.
You could effectively make that happen.
I guess it would feel more natural because the body was from conception had those parts rather than just removing one part and putting in another.
Mm-hmm. So a whole lot of interesting implications there.
What if we grow human bodies without heads just to be transplanted onto?
You mean like I have a backup reserve?
Yeah.
Why not? I'm sure there would be no ethical implications there, right?
Is there it wouldn't human? Be any, does it have a consciousness?
There wouldn't be any religious groups that would care about that. I mean,
nah. We'll be fine.
Nah.
Anyways, Casey, I believe you want to talk about the hackathon that mm-hmm. we're hosting. You're working with a group that's hosting.
Yeah. So I've talked about hackathons on here before. Effectively, what they are is you sign up, you go to the hackathon, wherever it's being hosted. So far, the ones I've been to have been affiliated with schools like UCLA and Caltech. And you are there for about 36 hours is usually how long they run. And they're free. Food and drinks are provided. Everything is provided, power, internet and everything. And you can be in up to teams of four. And the idea, despite its hackathon, you're not supposed to hack into anything. You're supposed to come up with a software or a hardware development with your team of up to four and compete with the rest of the attendees mm-hmm. for prizes and recognition and everything. And it's pretty amazing when you go there.
It's like a science fair that you do on the spot.
Yeah, it's like a mixture of a science fair and like a job fair because the industry's largest companies are usually there, like Microsoft and Google and things. And it's just you meet amazing people. Maybe it's a combination of the fact that you haven't slept for 36 hours, but the whole thing feels like a fever dream. And I am organizing one with some students from SMC, and we're making it free for everybody, but we're targeting it for community college students. We have registrations from all over the country and even some from Canada.
Wow, really?
Yeah. I even got interest from one guy, an international student, but we questioned the legitimacy because he said, he was from Nigeria.
Okay.
So we just thought that was a little funny. because he wanted us to reimburse him for travel expenses.
Okay. That might be a scam. All right. Was this Nigerian man perhaps a prince?
We made all those jokes. We said, like, we'll tell him if he can pay for it himself, we'd be happy to have him. But if he starts saying that he's a prince and that he'd love to forward us money, that we'll just dismiss him.
Is this Canadian guy, like, actually living in Canada? He's going to travel down for the hackathon? Or is he just, like, a foreign exchange student?
As far as we can tell, we have a heat map of all the different registrations around the country. And there are a few signatures from around Canada. Okay, just above Maine.
That's interesting.
So, yeah. So, it's all free. You get free stuff just for showing up. You're guaranteed free stuff. You can get thousands of dollars in rewards and prizes, potential jobs. I've been offered tons of jobs and internships just for being there. Mm-hmm. So, it's an awesome thing to do. It looks great on a college application. For more information, the website is hackcc.org. And again, it's totally free.
And I believe this is the first community college hackathon. So depending on how this one goes, we could have more. So let's try and make this one great.
The whole thing is a groundbreaking event. So it'll be a great thing just to be there.
Yeah.
So this has been the Memory Dump. I think we made some groundbreaking discoveries here today.
Yeah.
Human head transplants, bendable iPhones, HackCC. Kind of a grab bag.
Oh. Yeah, it's really the edge of tomorrow, wouldn't you say?
Okay. I'm going to address that next episode because we're kind of running out of time. But thank you for listening and have a nice day.
Thanks for listening, guys. Oh my God.